developments that might not be very supportive of local community.
Great. Yes, we would love to make sure people are watching what their cities are doing as far as upcoming developments.
All right. And I'm Sequoyna Wright for KBOO Evening News In Depth.
Thank you, baby. I just wanna take a little time out. Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Oh, wait. Thank you.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's winter membership drive. It was a success, and we couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you for your post, for your like, for your click. Thank you for your love, for your care, for your kind.
Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Hi, welcome to Out Loud Radio here on KBOO-FM. We are your queer news and culture radio program. We're going to be talking today with folks from the Lewis and Clark Gender Studies Symposium. We have a few folks in the studio and a call-in guest. This is a pretty exciting event that happens every year. I want to introduce our guests. They're students in gender studies, and they are organizers of this conference. We have Gus Wolf.
Hello.
Hi there. Amy Rosenheim.
Hi.
And Laura Bloom.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome so much. Why don't each of you introduce yourselves and tell us how you came to be involved in the Gender Studies Symposium, and then we'll talk about what the symposium is and how it's happening this year and all the excitement that goes with it.
Okay. Well, once again, my name's Gus Wolf. I'm a senior graduating in just 2.5 months or so, but we won't talk about that. The Gender Studies Symposium is actually our 33rd year. It's one of the longest symposiums of gender studies in the nation, and definitely at Lewis and Clark. I'm a political science major, and I got into gender studies in the symposium during my freshman year. It's my fourth year. I'm finally organizing it. And I think it's just gender studies is this interdisciplinary field of study that affects everywhere and everything that we do, hence our theme this year of space. And I just think it's really amazing to have 3 days devoted to talking about gender issues, queer issues. It's almost as if you live in this fancy world for 3 days in which, like, that's all anyone wants to talk about, but only for 3 days.
Great, thank you. Amy?
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm a French studies major at Lewis and Clark, and I got involved with the symposium, like, really seriously last year. Before that, I was kind of, like, loosely interested and attended, but I don't know, I was taking a feminist theory class, and I was working in the Feminist Student Union at Lewis and Clark, and I just became really passionate about these issues, so that's kind of how I got involved.
Great, thank you. Laura?
Hi, I'm Laura. I'm a anthropology and sociology major, gender studies minor. I'm also a senior at Lewis and Clark. I've been a fan of the symposium, and I've attended it since I was a freshman. I've always been really excited about it, and so I'm really happy to finally be part of the organization. I've also been, like Amy, I've been involved with the Feminist Student Union on campus, so I'm really engaged with these issues. And yeah, I totally echo what Gus said. It's just incredibly exciting to be able to engage with other people on these issues for 3 days and be part of a community of intellectuals and artists, et cetera, who like to talk about this stuff.
Wonderful. Do you have a favorite memory of the symposiums you've attended in the past couple of years?
Yeah, actually, a couple years ago, there was a panel, a student panel, and Gus was actually on this panel. And it was one of the most exciting panels I've ever seen. And they were talking about the sort of mainstream gay rights movement and the push for marriage equality and how that marginalizes a lot of queer and trans folks. And
I believe my panel title's name was "Does It Really Get Better?"
Yeah. So that was totally, you know, kind of like critiquing, you know, Dan Savage and that sort of movement. And people just got so fired up, and it was so exciting, and everyone was like cheering, and it was just really great.
Yeah, Laura stole my favorite moment, because one of the cool, amazing things about the Gender Studies Symposium is that students talking alongside professors, talking alongside like students maybe from like Puget Sound or Willamette or George Fox or Reed, and you just all are on equal ground, or even like professors from our school and or just activists from the local community. We're all like on the same ground just talking about our passion. There's no hierarchy. There's no like, we're all just like here to talk. And like Laura stole my memory, but being able to talk to like a crowd of like 70 or 80 about like a topic I was passionate about, and being so receptive and having that opportunity just as a sophomore was like not only one of my most cherished gender studies symposiums, but one of my most cherished like educational or Portland or Lewis and Clark or personal memory.
Wonderful. What about you, Laura?
Amy.
I'm sorry.
I would probably say the same panel, honestly.
Yeah, that was a good panel.
It was great. Actually, one of the speakers is going to be talking again this year.
Yeah.
I mean, Koyama.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good segue.
Yeah, we had her on the program a few months ago, which actually reminds me, I want to bring something up. She, up until last week or the week before, was one of the organizers of Portland's Queer Feminist Theory Reading Group, and she just moved to Seattle. Actually, I rode the bus with her back from Seattle on Sunday. But she's posted on Facebook that the reading group needs to find a new sort of curator of works for that folks, participants can read. So if any of you are interested out there in the audience, look for the Queer Feminist Theory Reading Group on Facebook, and you can get involved. And they meet it at, in other words, roughly once a month, maybe a smidge less than that. So, that was something I wanted to bring up anyway. So perfect there, yeah. And you wanted to talk some more about her, her. You know, if we wanted to start to talk about what's going on at the conference.
Well, yeah, Laura actually organized a panel on the intersections of gender and disability. So maybe you want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I put together a panel on, as Amy just said, the intersections of gender and disability. You know, so one of the ways that it works is, the symposium works, is we get submissions and we put together the panels from those submissions. But I was really, me and the other co-chairs were pretty disappointed to see that there weren't a whole lot of submissions about disability, and that, you know, to me is a really important issue with regards to space, especially with accessibility, and gender has a lot to do with disability and the politics around that. So I put together a panel. I contacted several activists in the Portland area, including Amy Koyama, and they all accepted. So that panel is going to be on Friday, March 7th at 11:30, and it includes Amy Koyama, Caitlin Wood, who's also a disabled activist, a feminist activist who lives in Portland, and Kathy Coleman, who is the director of the Disability Art and Culture Project. So what that's going to be about, they're just going to be kind of presenting, and then there's going to be a dialogue afterwards on gender, disability, what it means to be someone who's disabled, who's a woman or a woman of color, what it means to be a queer person who's disabled. So I'm really excited about that. And yeah, that's on Friday at 11:30.
And I just wanted to touch on, so Laura here is describing a panel. And so like our symposium, we have panels, which when people talk, like, you know, they each get like their 15 minutes, and there's a Q&A afterwards. And there's workshops like Amy will describe right now, or no?
Well, yeah, there's several workshops happening this year, but one that I'm really, really excited about is it's called Women of Color, How to Live in the City of Roses and Avoid the Pricks. It's a zine workshop featuring a grad student in library science from the University of Illinois and someone from the Women of Color zine group, and they're going to be presenting about zine culture in Portland, and then there's going to be like a brief zine making workshop, and that's on Wednesday, March 5th at 3:30, and it's going to be pretty great. And there's also another workshop with an artist, Anne Greenwood. She's been doing a social practice art project this
year.
In
which she collected these like really old from the 1920s sacks.
Yeah, feed sacks. Like, I guess they were made out of like cloth so that they could serve a dual purpose. And these particular ones, you can make dolls that were like tied to certain identities. So she's exploring identity through having people fill out this template of a feed sack with their own personal identity, and then that's displayed in the art show, which is also part of the
symposium. Yeah, we also have an art show. But that ties into like our theme of space in general, because it's about like art in spaces that aren't usually meant for art, such as these flea sacks, because you're used to seeing art in like museums or like museums. And so, I mean, that just like talk about our theme for a bit. So the symposium every year has a theme. Last year was religion and gender, that intersection. And the year before that was law and social movements. And this year we decided to go a little more abstract and go with space and the idea of not outer space, obviously. The idea of like environments and contexts and like just physical spaces, but also like the cyberspace. We have a panel on the cyberspace, and there'll be someone talking about Tumblr and YouTube makeup gurus and geek feminism on cyberspace, which is pretty interesting. And the amazing thing about this theme is that it's just so abstract, and it really makes you consider like the spaces we occupy and how our own personhood of gender and sexuality and identity intersect with those. Yeah.
Wonderful. Why don't you tell us a bit about the where's and when's of the symposium, and then how folks can find information online after this.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Lara again. So the symposium is going to be next week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So that's March 5th, 6th, and 7th. It's going to be at Lewis and Clark College, which is up on Palatine Hill in Southwest Portland. And it's all day on each of those days. It starts at 9:45 a.m. and it goes until the evening. There's going to be it's totally free also. I just want to emphasize that. Every single event is
very, very free.
Yeah, absolutely free. Anyone is welcome to attend. So there's going to be panels and workshops in the morning and afternoon. And then in later in the day, we're going to have our keynote addresses. You can find out more information on the Lewis and Clark website, www.lclark.edu. And you can also Google the Gender Studies Symposium. Just go to, or any search engine that you prefer, and search for Lewis and Clark Gender Symposium, and it should definitely come up there.
And we also have a Facebook page that gets updated. I'm sure we just post about this radio show. I'm sure we'll post some pictures of us in the radio show. But we also post articles by our keynotes or presenters. And then we also have a Twitter page. And Karma follows us, as we'll talk to her later. You can ask her about that. I wouldn't. And then we also have an Instagram page. And yeah, and to get to the symposium physically, there's the 39 TriMet bus. There's also a free shuttle, the Pioneer Express, from downtown 6th and Salmon, which is also on the Lewis and Clark website. And you can drive there, and parking's free. The symposium's free. It's all free.
Is that shuttle, anybody can use it?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Because some folks believe that it's only for students and staff at Lewis and Clark.
Most of the time it is. And I think if you want to use it, you should probably call ahead and let them know, because I don't think it's for students and staff mostly, but I think during the symposium they'll make an exception.
Great.
No one's there like bouncing you. There's no bouncer on the bus.
All right, thanks. We have it with us. We have Sarah Enser from Portland State. She is one of the folks who's going to be doing some work as part of a a panel, is that correct?
Yes.
Wonderful. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay. My name is Sarah, and Sarah, I'm an assistant professor in the English department at PSU, Portland State, and I teach a wide range of classes, 19th and 20th century American literature, queer theory, eco-criticism, environmental lit, and women's literature. And I actually taught a class in the fall on queer ecologies, and I'll be presenting on a panel, I believe, on queer ecology or queer environmentalism, and two of my students from that course are also on panel. So we made it a class project, actually, to apply to the symposium, and a bunch of us will be there happily.
All right. Do you want to tell us about this panel?
Sure. I actually don't know that much about the panel because I'll be meeting the other panelists there for the first time, and that actually refers back to something Gus said that I think is important to emphasize, which is that two things, actually. One of the ironies of being an academic is that you often travel away from home to present your work. And so many of my colleagues and students in Portland actually haven't seen me do what I do at other conferences, and often I have to travel to present new ideas. And so I'm really grateful to have the chance to present work in progress both to my own students and to other people in the Portland area. So it's actually unusual and really beneficial. And the other thing that's beneficial is the fact of egalitarianism, and the fact that these panels, you know, bring together graduate students, undergraduates, faculty, and community activists is really rare in academia to have all of those people speaking to one another. And I would say it's as beneficial and exciting on the faculty end as it is on the student end, because so much of our work with undergrads and grad students happens in the classroom, and it's exciting to have it happen in a symposium setting where people are really all sharing their ideas on equal footing. So I haven't yet met the other participants on my panel, and I'm really excited to get to know them.
This is Gus again. So she is performing on a panel with two Lewis and Clark students and a student from Washington State University. So there's a bunch of academic diversity.
That's really exciting.
That's great. What are you excited to be talking about this year, next week?
Next week. Not next year, coming right up.
TikTok.
So actually it's a really exciting opportunity because I was challenging my students to write proposals, and many of them will be presenting at a conference for the first time. I actually told them I would take the challenge of writing something new and doing something new. So my work usually tends to be on late 19th century American literature and the problem of queer ecology and various theoretical incompatibilities that have kept queer theory and queer literature from readily or easily meeting eco-critical discourse, environmental lit, and I can talk more about that. So I usually work on the 1890s, but I've been noticing really interesting homologies between writing from the 1890s and writing from the era of HIV and AIDS literature, mostly in the 1980s. So for this paper, I'm actually jumping a century forward and working on a genre that I don't usually write on, which is film, and a period that I don't usually write on, which is the 1980s. And I'm writing a paper about the way in which virality or viral contagion and viral temporality can be a space upon which these two fields can meet. So I'm focusing specifically on the 1990s era movie Safe by Todd Haynes and thinking about the particular configuration or relationship between immunity and community, basically, to put it briefly, in that film, but also in queer studies more generally.
And that's the film where Julianne Moore becomes increasingly, allergic in a way to her, to everything around her.
Yes. It's a really haunting film, and there's a lot of debate about what exactly it's about. So is it a film about multiple chemical sensitivities? Is it a film about environmental illness in some vague way? Is it an AIDS allegory? Is it class-based commentary? And the thing that most interests me is how Julianne Moore's sense of community and place and home breaks down, actually not as she gets more and more ill, but as she tries to render herself more and more immune or more and more safe and more protected. So I'm trying to do a reading of the breakdown of community as she becomes increasingly immune in connection with various queer theorists, Samuel Delaney, Tim Dean, Mel Chen, and others who have really theorized kind of porousness, exposure, and toxicity is potentially, ironically, being the ground of community as opposed to a kind of barrier to it. So Todd Haynes has this really provocative quotation about the film that Safe is on the side of the disease and not of the cure. And I'm kind of curious to interrogate what it means to make a film that's on the side of the disease and what that can mean in terms of queer ethics, environmental ethics, and so on. So
Very interesting. Yeah. My dream interview for the show is Samuel Delaney.
Well, if he comes, invite me along. I can't help you, but I'll gladly join in.
And Julianne Moore.
I'd love
to pick her brain.
Will you tie for us your understanding, what you're thinking around that movie and the cultural moment that it was created in to your understanding of discourse around illness and safety in the late 19th century?
Yeah. So actually the work that I've done that's closest to this relates to the problem of terminal illness in the late 19th century, and then thinking about the discourses of illness that now circulate around the environmental movement. And Bill McKibben, who's also a very famous environmental activist who many of us know, in his famous early book, The End of Nature, he wrote that the reason that Americans are reluctant environmental stewards is that the planet is terminally ill, and we don't easily make friends with the terminally ill. And on the one hand, that sounds like a logical claim, given an environmentalism that's often predicated on saving, right? As in, save the planet, heal the planet, make it better. But I pause a minute with his comment that we don't make friends with the terminally ill, because the kind of inaugurating impetus for queer theory as a field was, what does it mean to forge friendships in the era of HIV and AIDS, in the wake of HIV and AIDS, and friendships forged at bedsides, at gravesides, in a kind of collective mourning practice and a collective care practice. And the way in which I respond to his retort in my other work is actually not by immediately jumping to the 1980s, but by thinking about the late 19th century, when American literary regionalism, which is a kind of understudied genre, was writing about the end of these seafaring communities in New England. And the genre is often described as itself being terminal, or as a genre that has no future. And it's these very quiet, often boring stories about life in these small town communities, where all of the characters are aged, many of the characters are ailing, there are no children, there's no clear future. And yet there's some sense that something new will come out of these terminal states of being. So the question is, what is the future of a terminal being if we understand, for instance, the planet as terminal?
That's there's a lot to take in there. So that sounds like actually a pretty this panel in particular is called "To Be Real: Challenging Representations of Queerness." And you're giving a sense of one challenge you might be making there.
The other challenges. One will be challenging the representation of queerness in the famous documentary "Paris is Burning," and kind of discussing how it normalizes the sense of poverty amongst these drag queens that we've all loved to throw catchphrases around. And then the other two Lewis and Clark students. One's talking about art. AIDS art in the 1990s, and the other one is talking about queer in the environment. Laura Hallberg, she's an environmental studies major, and she's talking about what is the natural body and what do we deem natural, especially when we talk about like transgender or gender queer. What do we consider natural in these spaces? And Sarah.
No, in these two fields, I mean, there are plenty of queer environmentalists, but in terms of the structures of queer theory and the structure of environmental thought, they actually don't tend to easily talk. And so I think the panel will be really important for getting at multiple intersections between the fields.
Wonderful. This is very exciting. I'm glad all of you are here to talk about this. remind us again the where's and when's and how to find information online.
Yeah, this is Laura. Just to remind you again, so the Gender Studies Symposium is going to be next week, March 5th, 6th, and 7th. So that's next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. It's going to be at Lewis and Clark College. You can find more information about parking and times and transportation options on the Lewis and Clark website, lclark.edu. And you can also search online for Lewis and Clark Gender Studies Symposium. And there's going to be panels during the day, panels and workshops. There's a huge diverse array. The schedule is also posted online. And then in the evening, we're going to have keynote addresses.
And it's all free.
Yes, it's 100% free.
Thank you, it's free.
Wonderful. Sarah, thanks for joining us and giving us a brief on what you're going to be talking about. That's pretty exciting.
Thank you.
Yeah. we're gonna come back with Gus and Amy and Laura in a minute. Actually, we're going to hear a song from Minnie Riperton, and then we'll come back to discuss the Gender Studies Symposium some more. Thanks so much.
With time on her hands, no child to raise. You come to me like a little boy, and I give you my scorn and my praise. You think I'm like your mother, or another lover, or your sister, or the queen of your dreams. Just another silly girl, when love makes a fool of me. Nothing seems to keep you high. Drive your bargains, push your papers. Win your medals, play with strangers. Don't it leave you on the empty side? I'm looking for affection and respect, a little passion. You want stimulation, nothing more, that's what I think. But you know I'll try to be there for you when your spirits start to sing. Ooh, all this talk about holy. The latest style. Is it all books and words, or do you really feel it? Do you really laugh? Do you really care? Do you really smile when you smile? You criticize and you flatter. You imitate the best, and the rest you memorize. You know the times you impress me most are the times when you don't try. When you don't even try. I am a woman, a woman of heart.
Welcome back to Out Loud on KBOO-FM. Thanks so much for being here. I'm Alan, your host tonight. We're here with several of the organizers of the Gender Studies Symposium at Lewis and Clark. That's occurring next week, March 5th through the 7th. Before we jump into hearing about the keynote speakers at this week's, and this month's, oh my mouth, this month's symposium, I want to mention something that I found, and it riffs a little bit off of the panel discussion that each of you here in the studio right now were discussing earlier. And we have Gus and Amy and Laura with us from Lewis and Clark. We'll go back to the symposium in a moment, but there's a press at Portland State called Ooligan Press. And they're putting together an issue, an anthology called More Than Marriage. So they're looking for folks to write about how marriage is not the only thing that queer folks need to be talking about, that there's all of these other perspectives and needs for the queer community, and that marriage, while marriage has really taken the most public face of what queer rights is, what else is out there? So that's More Than Marriage. Get in touch with Ooligan Press at Portland State. Look that up online. And their deadline to submit is March 7th, so that's next week. So hopefully, if you've got something to say, it's pretty ready to for your pen to put it out. So let's talk about the keynote speakers at this year's symposium.
Okay, yeah. So I'm Laura. I'm one of the organizers. So on Wednesday, March 5th at 7 p.m., we have our first keynote, and that's France Windance Twine. She is a professor of sociology at UC Santa Barbara. And she's going to be giving a talk called The Sexual Life of Soldiers, The Circularity of Violence in a Masculine Institution. So Windance does a lot of research on masculinity and the military. And so she's going to be talking about how, you know, something that people don't talk about a lot in regards to the whole issue of sexual assault in the military is that 50% of sexual assault survivors in the military are men. And that's not something that really gets talked about in terms of how masculinity is a factor in the military sexual assault issue. And so she's going to be talking about that. Some other work that she's done, she wrote a book called Girls with Guns, which is about women and gender in terms of gun ownership. And she also has done a lot of really interesting work on biracial families in the UK. So, yeah, that's France Windance Twine, and she's going to be at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, March 5th, and that'll be a really interesting talk.
Great. Thanks, Laura.
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm also an organizer. On Thursday, we have two keynote speakers, which we're really excited about. The first is at 3:30 p.m., Christina Hanhart. She is a professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland. The title of her talk is No Safe Spaces, Violence and Gentrification in LGBT Activist History. And she just wrote a book called Safe Space, which is about similar topics. And it's going to be a really interesting history about like safety patrols in gay neighborhoods and the way that those have influenced gentrification in the past, like, 100 years or less than that. And then our other keynote is at 7 p.m. Karma Chavez, who's assistant professor of communication and Chicano and Latino studies at the University of Wisconsin. And the title of her talk is Queer Migrations and Coalitional Gestures Toward Radical Third Space Politics. I won't talk too much about that because she'll be joining us on the show pretty quick here.
And then our final keynote is Friday at 7 p.m., delivered by Francesca Ramsey, who people may know more as Cheska Lee, a really popular YouTube YouTuber. She's well known for her groundbreaking video, Stuff White Girls Say to Black Girls. If you know the video, you know that's not the title, but if you don't know the video, it's a really amazing piece of using this viral world that we live in now of memes and quick YouTube videos and actually delivering it with a social message that gets 10 million views, featured on Anderson Cooper and Today's Show and stuff. So she's going to be talking about your powerful online voice using social media for social change. And so tying into the theme, she's using the social media landscape and how you can actually have gender and racial discourse on there. And just to clarify, our keynote lectures, the symposium is mainly through proposals of students and professors, as we've been talking about. But keynotes are some really important speakers that we thought we should seek out beforehand, because we've been planning this symposium for about 10 months now. I think a friend described it to me as having a baby and then one more month. And we're ready to give birth to our symposium in a week. but we've been playing since June, and so over the summer we collected the keynotes, and then in the fall we sent out a call for papers, and the students and professors from the region contacted us and we went through the proposals. And it's all student run, all student deliberated, and all student produced.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for that that brief on three of the keynote speakers at this year's Gender Studies Symposium. Just remind us where, when, and how folks can access the symposium.
This is Gus, and the Gender Studies Symposium is at Lewis and Clark College, which is in Southwest Portland, available via the 39 TriMet line, the Pioneer Express shuttle, and your car. Parking is free. The whole, every panel is free, and it is March 5th through 7th next week.
Wonderful. And the fourth keynote speaker you mentioned is Karma Chavez, and we have Karma on the telephone today. Karma, can you hear us?
I sure can.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm Alan, and we have Gus and Amy and Laura in the studio.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, can't wait to meet all of you.
Yeah. See you next week.
So, Karma, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do?
Yeah, sure. So I teach in Wisconsin, where it's really, 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 really cold right now. So I'm excited to get to Portland next week, even if only for a little bit. And I teach in communication and also in Chicano Latino studies. And I do work kind of at the intersection of queer politics and immigration politics, feminism, that kind of thing. And I guess I see my work as trying to bridge connections between academic work and activist work to varying degrees of success, I guess.
How do you find medicine to be a place to do just that particular kind of work?
You know, I think medicine has been really good in that regard. Of course, there's its history as a very radical kind of space, which I guess in some ways it is, but there's a lot to do here. You know, Madison actually is known as a liberal bastion, but it actually has some of the highest racial disparities, for example, in the entire United States. So it's a great place to do a lot of community work that really can be informed, I think, by the university, and it's a small enough town where that's possible. So I think it's a good place to get some good work done.
That's great. It's actually I did a year of graduate studies in medicine and sociology. Some time ago. It was almost 20 years ago now. And it was the sixth college I attended. And after that, I was defeated by academia and crawled home to Portland. So.
Well, they say Madison is like a miniature version of Portland. So.
It was a beautiful place. A beautiful place, and you couldn't walk down the street without someone who was part of a socialist organization trying to recruit you. That was my experience. Really
that
was.
Hasn't
changed. Do you want to tell us what you're going to be talking about in Portland next week?
Yeah, so I'm actually super excited about this because I just put a book out in November. Actually, Christina Hanhart and I, our books came out basically the exact same day. And we had a book party together at the American Studies Association conference last November, so I'm super excited to be with her. But so my book came out, and now I'm thinking about some other projects. And so what I'm going to talk about next week is kind of a bridging between that project that I just finished with two projects I'm working on right now, one which is a collaborative kind of dialogic project with a scholar named Adela Licona from University of Arizona about coalition. And then the other is part of the talk, so I guess I'm taking up this question of coalition in these different venues, one of which is sort of dialogue and coalition. And then the other part, in addition to the book, and that is going to be looking at when coalition is not progressive, like what do we do with that? Because I think a lot of theorizing about coalition assumes that it will have a progressive kind of outcome. And so I'm looking at coalitions built in deliberative contexts. In other words, in the U.S. Senate between supposed liberals and conservatives, and how that actually ends up impacting immigrant communities in debating the HIV ban during the early years of AIDS. And so I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about that too. So it's kind of a hybrid thing that I'm doing, and hoping to get some good conversation and feedback.
Exciting. Do you have questions? Do the folks in here have questions for Karma?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, I mean, we were kind of talking on here earlier about the sort of mainstream gay rights movement, and Alan, you mentioned the anthology that's coming out from Portland State University, kind of about queer activism that is about more than marriage. And I wondered if you could just speak to that a little bit, because I know that that's some of the work that you do, and I know that you and Yasmin Nair have been in conversation with each other, so...
Yeah. No, I was listening to the show before I called in, and I was super excited to hear about the More Than Marriage or whatever the collection is that folks are working on at Portland State. I work with a collective called Against Equality, and it's, of course, by design meant to provoke you a little bit, because who could possibly be against equality? But we are, because our sort of position is that what we've been fed as equality is actually not equality at all. And so at the heart of that is the mainstream LGBT movement, or actually I would just say, I guess, the mainstream gay and lesbian movement. So Against Equality is a group that I've been a part of for about 3 years, but it's been in existence since 2009. And our central objective is to question the focus of the mainstream movement on the issue of marriage, on the issue of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and then on the issue of hate crime legislation, which were sort of the, like, three key issues for so many years, and now, of course, we're just focused on marriage. But from my perspective, and from the perspective of Against Equality, these three institutions actually prop up other institutions that we actually don't want to be a part of. So, you know, marriage, I think, is somewhat obvious, because only people who actually have benefits to give would ever benefit from marriage, not to mention all the, you know, almost centuries of feminist critique of the institution. But with something like hate crime, it can be a little bit less obvious, right? So, well, who wouldn't want hate crimes? Because you want to punish people who target us as LGBTQ people. But, of course, hate crimes actually function to expand the prison industrial complex. And the prison industrial complex is probably the worst place on earth for queers and people of color and poor people. Mm-hmm. And so why would we want to support a system that's actually really bad for us? That's not equality. Same can be said for the military. So this is a big part, I think, of the work that I'm interested in doing, and also questioning how those logics of why can't we all just be included, why can't we just all be equal, by definition actually are kind of exclusionary. And, of course, Yasmin Nair, who you mentioned too, and Ryan Conrad, who's another collaborator, this is a big part of the work they do as well.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, that's really, I'm glad you brought all that up, because actually in the fall we had another symposium at Lewis and Clark College, the Ray Warren Symposium on Race and Ethnic Studies, and that symposium was totally centered on the prison industrial complex. So it's really important that we're, you know, still talking about that and kind of keeping that conversation going in terms of how the prison industrial complex affects queer people, trans people, people of color, people who are in poverty, etc. So yeah, that's really important. Thank you.
Well, it is. I think it's interesting how little the LGBT community, the mainstream movement, has focused on that issue, because communities of color have had to focus
right.
on the issue of prisons. And I think, you know, I was really pleased when, with Democracy Now, it was it last week, where Amy Goodman interviewed both Laverne Cox, who's in Orange is the New Black, who plays the trans character, and then, of course, Cece McDonald, who was recently released from prison, who was the, you know, trans woman who was in prison for 19 months for defending herself against her attacker. And so these are queer issues,
right.
but we just don't, a lot of our community doesn't think about it. So I hope that there's a, and I think with Christina's work and probably many of the other folks at the symposium, there will be a nice connection that will show a strong alliance between all parts of the queer community and, you know, communities of color.
Yeah, I was just going to, this is Gus, by the way, excited to meet you and hear you next week. I was just going to mention the connection with Christina's keynote and like kind of the concept that if you follow the gay rights narrative that we're given in this country, it started with Stonewall. I mean, we're told it started with Stonewall with like an anti-police demonstration. And it's like pretty fascinating how over the course of simply four decades, we've gone from like calling the police out to having them in our pride parades. And so I think it's a fascinating subject, rich with debate.
Yeah, it really is. I'm hoping that those connections really will come out.
Is there anything else you're excited to see at the symposium or excited to see in Portland? Do you have experience in Portland? It's much less cold than it was in Madison. I think you would laugh at our snowpocalypse that we had 2 weeks ago of like 4 inches, weather city shut down.
Well, you know, my good friend Cynthia Lynn, who's from Madison, she's living in Portland right now, working for the Western State Center, doing reproductive rights, and she was telling me about, you know, how kind of adorable it was, you know, that you all had. But no, I'm very excited. I mean, my friend Cynthia's there. I've got a lot of actually great connections there. A good friend of mine named Kathy Boucher, who teaches at a community college there that I can't pronounce.
Willamette?
Shemekata? No,
it starts with a C-H.
Shemekata.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. So she teaches there, and she's actually, she's a professor now, but she was a part of a LGBT community center in Tucson, Arizona, a decade ago when I was doing my research there. And she's actually the person who really kind of introduced, or one of the people who introduced me to thinking about the intersections between immigration politics and queer politics. And so I think she's going to be at the symposium. I'm really excited to see her. And then, my brother and sister Outlaw, they live in Portland, so got a lot of connections there. So I'm super excited to
and
be
soon you'll
for
have
those
a,
reasons.
And soon you'll have a connection with Lewis and Clark College.
Yeah, and I mean, this symposium seems fantastic, and you all have put together such an amazing schedule of people. I'm sorry I'm not going to get to see more of it.
Well, we're really excited to have you, definitely.
And so how long has this symposium been going on? Maybe you already answered that.
It's the 33rd year.
Whoa.
And, yeah. We were one of the
old school.
Yeah, we were one of the first in the country. Yeah. Still going strong.
That's fantastic. And Alan, what a great thing to be talking about this kind of thing on your radio show.
Absolutely. I'm very happy that we're talking about this.
How long has Outloud been a program?
10 years.
Awesome.
Yeah, indeed. We also just, we're seeing the birth of a new queer radio show that's developing online and is working its way towards the FM dial.
Wild Planet?
Yeah.
Bobby's listening right now.
We've had him on a couple of times in the last couple of months because it's so exciting to have something that's dedicated. You know, they'll more than just an hour a week, they'll be able to really embrace a lot more aspects of queer culture. And the interviews that I've been hearing, listening to the Wild Planet organized interviews of local folks, online activists, including folks who have worked on racial and sexual politics for decades in Portland, they've really been fascinating. So I think Wild Planet is getting off to a great start. So this is things are happening.
Very cool.
Karma, you have history in radio, though. I mean, you have can you speak on that maybe on a radio show? Speak upon your radio. That's not too meta.
Sure. I was actually just getting ready for my show tomorrow before I talk to you all. So so Madison has its own kind of version of KBOO. It's a WRT community radio station, and you know provides a lot of different programming of all sorts. So we have a queer show, and we have shows in, you know, other local languages, and I host every other week a public affairs program on Wednesdays over the lunch hour, it's a fantastic thing to be able to talk about any issue in depth that really matters to me. So my shows generally focus on issues of queer and racial justice, on issues of economic justice, homelessness, things of that kind of nature, and I try and balance between a sort of local perspective, but also a national and international perspective. And I think radio is a really it's a great thing for academics. It's a great way to put our skills to kind of public function. And that's something that's really important to me. And so I really see it as a connection to my work in pretty concrete ways. And I love doing stuff like this, like whenever there's a cool event in town, you know, being able to talk to the people involved and really get community interested in intellectual projects, because I think that's just really a great service that community radio provides. So I'm really excited to be a part of this show tonight and my own.
Great. Thanks so much, Karma. We look forward to hearing you talk next week.
Thursday
Thank
at 7 p.m.
I'm really excited.
Yay. So that's Thursday. What is it, Gus?
Thursday at 7 p.m.
Great. Thanks so much. Let's get back to with Gus and Amy and Laura to talking a little bit more about the structure of this symposium. Again, how folks can find more information, how they can get up there, the fact that it's free to everyone who wants to attend.
Yeah, so this is Laura. Yeah, so the symposium is a free 3-day event. It's going to be next week, March 5th through the 7th, and it's going to be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all day on all 3 days. And so it's a student-run 3-day series of workshops, lectures, readings, performances, panel discussions, and there's also an art show. So that's we've collected submissions from artists all over the country, and we're going to be displaying them on campus relating to the theme of gender, power, and space. So, yeah, so in the daytime, there's workshops, panel discussions, etc., and in the nighttime, we're going to have our keynote presentations, one of which is Karma Chavez. Yeah, and it's totally free. You can get to the campus. It's in Southwest Portland. There's driving directions and parking directions on the Lewis and Clark website. That's lclark.edu. You can also take TriMet to get there. And again, if you want to know more information about the symposium, it's on the website, lclark.edu. You can search on a Google or wherever for Lewis and Clark Gender Symposium. And we're also on Twitter and Facebook, so you can check us out there.
And Instagram, I'm told.
Yes.
This is Gus. I had the honor to make the Gender Studies Symposium Instagram.
We have a few minutes if you want to tell us a little bit more about aspects of this year's symposium next week that each of you is really excited about.
I just want to stress, like, due to our theme of space, the wide variety of topics we have at hand, it'll be impossible to list all of our panels, because we have over 20 and like over a lot of workshops too. But just to list off some of the spaces, because I think one of the awesome things about this theme is how inviting it has been for students, professors, and whatnot. And I think space is a really interesting topic in general. When we're talking about like our rapidly changing world of like technology and globalization, like the internet, and how like, what do we define as space anymore? And so we have stuff on like young adult novels, we have sacred spaces, urban spaces, the rural space, Islam society. We have someone talking about country music, someone talking about Willamette Week's coverage of female artists, like that space in the media. And so, like, really take a look at that schedule. Like, go on your Google or your Bing or your Ask Jeeves. Find that schedule, because, yeah. But to go more specific, I don't know, does anyone take that?
Yeah, well, one of the panels that I'm really excited about is there's going to be a panel called Campus Safety, and that's going to be about the space of the campus, so and how gender and sexuality have to do with that. So that and some of the panelists on that are going to be talking about transgender students' experiences on campuses. There's going to be a panelist talking about sexual assault on college campuses, and so that one is going to be really interesting, I think. Just talking about these issues that directly affect college campuses on a college campus.
And that will be at 3:30 on Friday.
Great. What about you, Amy?
I'm really excited about a panel that's on Thursday morning, I think at 9:45. It's that's not what it is. Wait, sorry. I'm looking at the schedule right now. Yeah, it's called Tired Tropes and Fresh Takes. It's looking at pop culture and gender. And Gus mentioned a couple of the speakers on that panel, the country singer focused project. There's also someone talking about car culture and car industry and gender, and also the trope of the manic pixie dream girl.
I'm also on Thursday at 11:30 to tie in with the queer focus of this radio show. An alum, Fallon Thompson, is going to speak on the Lavender Scare in the Rose City, Building and Policing Portland's Queer Community, 1940 to 1955. So that's probably going to be really, really fascinating. And it's going to be on a panel called Navigating Urban Space, with someone also speaking upon biking in the urban environment, the intersection of that with gender, and someone also speaking about political protests and gentrification in Cairo.
All right. And of course, gentrification is a hot issue here now. But we're gonna take a break from talking about that, and we're gonna focus our attention next week on gender studies at Lewis and Clark at the symposium. So please, everyone is welcome to join. All of the events are free. lclark.edu for the full schedule of events, speakers, panels, workshops, and art. Thank you so much, Gus Wolf, Amy Rosenheim, and Laura Bloom for joining us
to talk about it.
Thank you. This is Alan. We are Out Loud. Stay out loud and proud of yourselves. Thanks so much for joining us today.
See you next week.
The time is 7:02. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Hard Knock Radio is next.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
It's history. It's history. Never been done before. Never been done
in this country. In this country.
Running. Somebody.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition. It is Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we talk about the Black Arts Movement and an upcoming conference. We're going to have special guest Marvin X on the phone with us. Later on, we're going to be talking with Melina Abdullah about the fight to keep ethnic studies alive and well in California. And then we're going to end the show by talking about the importance of bone marrow transplant and how it impacts people of color. All that and more coming up after the afternoon headlines.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I think on a daily basis, if I've got my math straight, they put probably $1.6 million in the bank. That's a complete profit. Everybody's paid. All the supplies are taken care of. Food's on the shelf, and it's not enough.
John Dredla, business agent for Local 50G of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco, and Grain Millers Union. Nearly 500 Kellogg's workers in Omaha, Nebraska are concerned that the very profitable company will deliver an ultimatum to accept a casual workforce at lower wages with no benefits or be locked out. Kellogg's locked out 200 Memphis, Tennessee workers when they refused a similar demand. Dredla says it's an attempt to impose changes to the union's master agreement on a local level.
What they want is to be able to hire a 100% casual workforce today and going forward. It would virtually, through attrition, wipe out the union. There would be no more union.
The union representing more than 1,250 faculty at Portland State University in Oregon says it's reached an impasse with the university in labor contract talks. Among the issues are salary, tenure, and tenured positions being replaced by part-time short-term positions. Professor Mary King is president of PSU's American Association of University Professors.
The real issue is 20 years of cuts to the academic mission because of state disinvestment in higher ed, and it's meant a reduction in what we're offering our students at the same time that they're going into debt to pay for their education. And in this context, our contract is really a fight to keep student tuition dollars in the classroom, to shore up the academic mission, and to shore up a stable faculty.
The faculty labor contract at PSU expired in August. The impasse declared by the union triggers a 30-day cooling off period. Professor King says faculty doesn't want a strike, but faculty does have that legal right in Oregon, and a strike is possible unless an agreement is reached. Harris Stowe University administrators in St. Louis have declared an